It is now time for the crime report, sponsored by the Suffolk County Crime Stoppers, 1-800-220-TIPS. All calls kept confidential. Monetary reward, sometimes up to $5,000 for information that leads to an arrest, 1-800-220-8477. Joe Jacklin, retired NYPD sergeant. He's a former commanding officer of the Bronx Cold Case Squad, a current adjunct professor at John Jay College, author of the bestseller. It's called The Criminal Investigative Function of Guyver New Investigators, edition number 3, the highly decorated member in his day of the NYPD, and that includes, by the way, the Department Medal of Valor. Sarge, how are you, sir?
Good, Jay. How are you?
I am well. I tell you, chock full of stuff, Joe, all through the week. I want to start with what's happening within the NYPD itself. Joe, 9 suicides since June. That's crazy. I mean, I don't even know how to decipher. You were a member 20 years within the force. You know, I'm just wondering what triggers this stuff, and what is the department going to do about it?
Well, let's start with the first question. People understand that police officers face the worst that the public has to offer every day. Death, destruction, car accidents, you name it, and it weighs on people over a long period of time. And just based on, I guess, personality, or how you handle things, or how you vent, so to speak, right? What type of activity do you do to try to get this out of your mind, whether it's exercise, whether it's, hopefully it's not drinking or what have you. And the issue that comes down to is that mental health and policing is a big problem. Police officers, if they go to seek help, if they go to see a psychologist or somebody like that, and the department finds out about it, they will sit you down, they will take away your guns, and you'll be working, in a basement somewhere. And the cops know this, so that they don't get the proper treatment that they really need.
Yeah, I mean, does each precinct, are they equipped to have counseling? Is there some sort of psychologist on board there? I mean, and if not, do you think that'll be incorporated into the system now?
No, there aren't any psychologists at any of the precincts. There's barely any paper towels when I was there, let alone a psychologist. So, the job is in a tizzy here. They had just reported the other day that the mayor and his wife, they had pulled out of a mental health thing that was going to include cops because of one of the organizations that were in there was too pro-cop for them. So they pulled out of this. It's been widely reported now, so that has to be looked into about why police officers were, not given the right amount of, help to begin with.
Right.
Here's an example of how difficult it is to get the cops help. Because, like I said before, the city and the police department are in a bad position. So if they have a police officer who needs help and they get him help, and everyone knows about it, and then something happens a year later or 6 months later, what happens then? So they'll say, every defense lawyer in the world is going to question why or his person's ability about should they have been out in the street. They had sought all kinds of help. See, therein lies the problem. They have a number of organizations that try to do these things anonymously, right? Some hotlines, they have PAPA, and they have a couple other organizations, and they try to do the best job they can, but it's like everything else. It requires the individual who needs help to reach out to them. Nobody can go out and reach out to somebody.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And it seems like even in the latest case of Robert Echevarria, the sister now has come out saying that he had some issues here. If not the officer, him or herself reaching out, you would like to see a family member kind of come out before these tragedies can actually take place. As in the case of Echevarria, it would have been certainly a good thing based on what we heard from the sister here.
Well, yes. I mean, it's the people that live with these individuals, might notice the change a lot faster than some of the coworkers, right? Because, like everything else, we all know that sometimes we act differently at work than we do at home.
Right.
So, this is something where the family members need to, things too, but they understand too. The family understands too the consequences of, intervening so forth, because like I said, if they get involved in something and they make a notification, this officer will be, once again, he'll be placed on modified assignment, stripped of his or her guns, and sat down somewhere. So, and you know what? I mean, if these cops, they need to work the overtime and the details and all those other things in order to get the money in order to survive, you know, this is, you put their livelihood on the line and you put their means of making extra money so that they can support their families, because we all know that living on Long Island or New York City or whatever is extremely expensive. So, you know, and New York City cops don't make the kind of money that some of the police departments make. And that's something that also needs to be looked at. I mean, the city was, you know, they're going to say anything they want. Oh, we're looking into this. We're trying to figure it out. I mean, you know, generally it's financial problems for things or relationship problems. These are the kind of things that get manifested down deep in you when you're working as a police officer. These are the things that, you know, if they bubble up, those are things your family relationships change, all the different things that can happen to you socially. So, yeah, that could be warning signs. But like I said, I think most families understand the consequences also.
No question. Tough one, though. Joe Jacqueline, the Crime Report. Let's move to Philadelphia. What happened the other night? Guys finally taken into custody. What, Joe? Six officers wounded. It all started when police, I guess, went to a row house with a narcotics warrant. And I guess some of the officers were in the kitchen of that house. And that's when this guy began to shoot. And police shot back. And this guy continued to fire intermittently, sometimes shooting at a window during this standoff. Some of these guys escaped, police did. Others were kind of trapped in that home with the shooter and later rescued by a SWAT team. You know, I tell you, there's so many questions here. You know, you and I spoke briefly yesterday on this. You know, how this actually escalated into the evening. You know, it started in the afternoon, and this thing is... that's a tough one right there in the dark. I mean, it could have ended tragically beyond here. That's my first one. And the second one, we talk about assault weapons and all the time. This guy had one. And firing off at will here, Joe. Those are two big things in this case.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're going to have what they refer to as an after-action report and take a look at some of these things. I mean, but the only thing, I mean, that jumps off the page at me is, you know, the only thing I question out of this whole thing was, you know, why execute a warrant at 4:30 in the afternoon? And you know, I mean, me personally, if all possible, you get the judge to sign a no-knock or a nighttime endorsement, and you go in at 4:00 in the morning,
right,
when people are asleep and there's less people around and less likelihood that someone's going to fight you. I mean, I'm not going to say it's always foolproof, but less likely. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of that could mitigate something like this in the past. But you know what, though? We don't know exactly just yet what the warrant was. We might find out that they applied for one of these warrants and then were denied then by the judge. I mean, we also don't know if this guy is the intended target in the place, right? They might not know he was in there. And somebody else might have been the intended target, and then this guy was there to start opening fire. But this guy's a bad guy. He's got 18 prior arrests.
That's
a number of gun possessions. And this is the third question I have on this, too, is that the DA they have over there is one of these very progressive DAs. This guy, Larry Krasner, I think his name is. And the state, about a month ago, was talking about taking over his gun cases because he wasn't prosecuting gun cases. So that's something else that they're going to have to look into.
You know, Joe, I tell you, six cops lucky to be alive here and getting into a gun battle with a drug suspect armed with an AK-47. I mean, listen, no one, particularly those involved in enforcement, should have to face anybody, a gunman armed with that kind of weaponry. You know, and in Philly, you know, these 47s are very much too often, what I'm reading, a favorite for these killers. I think a year ago you had a shooting involved that left two people dead. Same neighborhood, by the way, as the other day there. And 6 years ago, a cop sought a suspect who used an AK-47 in two shootings. And that left yet another man dead. So, you know, listen, I don't know what Washington's going to do. These weapons were once banned federally. We know no longer. Totally legal, by the way, in the state of Pennsylvania and elsewhere, and very easy to get. You know, Joe, you're going to have to find some sort of way here. You know, we saw what happened in El Paso and everything else. You know, I don't know what's going to become of it here. NRA then, you know, does their thing. You know, the talk always happens, and then, you know, there's always the, you know, the pushback, and then all of a sudden you move on to something else instead of trying to get something done here.
Yeah, it seems as if both the politicians and the NRA like this, you know, let things blow over, and then hopefully you don't have another mass shooting for a while so people forget about it. And it just seems like every time it happens, everybody's arguing over it, and then nothing ever gets done. I mean, that's basically, and this has been going on for, you know, decades now. Everybody, you know, it's just, I don't have the answer. I don't know what the answer is, you know, but, you know, as a former cop, I mean, you don't want to, like you said, you don't want to be facing the AK-47 when you're walking in the door. That's for sure.
No question. Joe Jackal on the Crime Report. Let's talk about the governor and domestic terrorism and everything else. We had him on the other day talking about this. You know, listen, there's no firm type deals as far as the legality of it all regarding domestic terrorism. You know, it's kind of new terminology, but based, you know, based on what we're seeing here and especially what happened in Dayton and in especially El Paso, you know, you would think that something has to come to fruition here and open up kind of a new category, so to speak, in the courts. Domestic terrorism laws, I know it's been bandied about. Do you think finally this thing will, you know, somehow be set in stone?
Well, you know, here's the issue here. Like the FBI, who runs basically all the terror organization, investigations, once it's been deemed so, they define it as, you know, somebody who has, you know, worked within the United States, and they try to change something for political, religious, social, racial, or environmental issues. So those five things have to fit the definition in order to get charged with the terrorism under the federal government. So, you know, the governor can write whatever statutes he wants, or, you know, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, 90% of these things are going to fall under a hate crime.
Right.
You know, what do you call it? And that's basically what it is. So if you target somebody based on their race, religion, you know, even now age, you know, you're going to be charged under the hate crime statutes, which is a, you know, still a very stiff penalty if convicted. I mean, I think it's for every charge, it's an extra 7 years on top of it. So, you know, the hate crime statutes were written a while back in, you know, for the civil rights, after the civil rights passage in the 1960s. But the issue that comes down to is that we have issues within our society, and if you want to label it domestic terrorism because it makes you feel better, okay. But 9 times out of 10, it doesn't fit the definition. You know, everyone likes to throw that word around. Everybody's a law expert or a legal expert these days, and everybody says, oh, well, let's do this. Like that's going to deter any of these, you know, people who are going to do this. I can tell you right now, having a new statute isn't going to deter somebody who is sitting at home, maybe using drugs, or maybe needs mental health issues, has access to guns, and it's not going to stop them from doing it. Sorry, it's just not going to happen.
Well, you're probably right, but all in all, you have to formulate a plan here, somehow, some way, and get, you know, I think the key is really defining it, and you're going to have to put some language in there to really kind of pinpoint this stuff. Because you're right, you know, hate crimes are one thing, but you have a slew of what's going on here. We saw what happened in Dayton and especially El Paso, without question. Let's move to what happened. Business, I guess the windows open on Wednesday with the lawsuits, Joe, 400 of them, I believe, were filed. You know, the new child sex abuse laws in the state. So basically, it will let adult survivors of child sexual abuse sue an abuser or a negligent institution. And no matter how long ago that abuse actually took place, and the law instituting this 1-year period now for the filing of these suits, which began on Wednesday. Long time coming. This thing has been bandied about, I think, 13 years. I mean, absolutely a disgrace that they couldn't get this thing together. More worried about, you know, the economics of it all, as far as insurance companies and everything else, you know what? Who cares about that? You know, get those who committed these vile acts and brought to justice. It's tough. And we've had many an expert on, you know, people can't come to the table with this. for a long time. Now, hopefully, it's going to open up a lot of doors.
Well, I like the fact that of the whole lore, and yes, there's a long time coming, but the fact that about holding institutions responsible for this, too. I mean, this has really been already in place. You know, for instance, in New York City, you were responsible for, anything, let's say, revolved around discrimination, right, and from the federal government. And if you as a supervisor didn't report it, or if the job tried to cover it up, they would also be personally liable for it. So I think we're taking the same kind of approach, and I think that's important. So if you look at the problems that we've had with the church, where we've had, hundreds of cases now that have come forward into the court system, including in Pennsylvania, I think they had, 700. So the issue that comes down to is that when you hold these institutions responsible for their people and you don't do anything about it, then you have automatically now entered into the realm of being sued and held liable. I think that's an important aspect, because that's when reporting things change. That's when culture changes. And we need to do this in order to protect our children. I mean, this is, you would think that why has this taken so long? I think most people, when they read this stuff, Jay, they think it and say, well, why wasn't this in place in the begin with?
No reason it shouldn't have been, Joe. We talk about this all the time with lawmakers throughout when they're in session. There's no excuses. You know, they seem to piecemeal stuff of this nature and never giving you a comprehensive pack of laws here. But at least this is a start. And, hopefully, like I said, the floodgates are going to open up here. You're going to probably have thousands of these cases come into place, within the next couple of months. So, beware. That's basically it. Because, now it's going to come about. So we'll see how it transpires. Let's move to the whole Epstein deal. You can have any theory you want here. This is a guy with a lot of money, and forget bail, forget anything. This guy was going to be—he wasn't going to see the light of day for the rest of his years on this planet. I mean, that's really what it came down to. The question is, what happened? Federal type lockup, checking on an individual of this nature every 30 minutes did not happen. You can pretty much figure it out as far as what went down here, but. Whatever it is, you feel bad for the victims here as far as getting their day in court and actually, having the pleasure of Jeffrey Epstein rot in prison.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is, once again, the victims get victimized. They're not going to see their cases pretty much in the courtroom, and that's what you have to really be concerned about for their well-being. You hope that they are getting the help that they need in order to get through this. But yeah, the Epstein case, the problem is, listen, he should have been watched. He should have been on the suicide watch. They should have been doing their rounds. There's just a lot of things that they should have been doing, but they didn't. And here we are now. Everybody is, coming up with their own conspiracy theory, about what happened and who's involved. And it's actually nutty just to even hear these conspiracy theories. I mean, I this is what happens when people don't do their jobs and when the equipment doesn't work, right? So the camera doesn't work.
Yeah.
The corrections officers aren't doing their 30-minute checks. I mean, this is what happens, Hey, listen, this was a huge profile case. You would think that everybody would have been on point with this, but it just didn't happen. It kind of just scratched your head.
Yeah, really. That's what it is. You can, again, figure it out. Everybody has their theories, even the president tweeting it out as far as the Clintons were concerned. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Come on. But the fact of the matter is this guy had a ton of money, could have paid off, a group of guards, said, listen, leave me alone for an hour or so. I got to take care of some business here. And then they found him. You could pretty much figure out what went down here. But the bottom line is that Epstein did not want any part of the system, knew he was cooked. And this was his way out. So tough one for the victims, though. That's the ones who suffer the most here. Joe Jacklow on the Crime Report. Joe, a couple of quick ones here. The extensive cache of weaponry and armor that were seized from this car, a couple of homes, Great Neck plastic surgeon, and by the way, was overheard at some bar threatening to kill his estranged wife and her family, and thus the arrest of Matthew Bonanno there.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I heard the name, right, of course, then you automatically think of something else. But the issue becomes, yeah, I mean, the thing that you look at here is, like, once again, there's a commonality here, right? The domestic violence and access to weapons. I mean, we've seen the domestic violence part in many of these mass shootings, and it's something that should not be taken lightly. You know, we hope that society keeps on putting the pressure on for domestic violence. Maybe penalties need to be stiffer. Maybe we need to come up with some better reporting system or what have you. But that's pretty much the commonality we see in a lot of cases. Just like, you know, when we studied serial killers a long time ago, they found out that, you know, as kids they torture small animals and then they eventually work their way up to people. Well, domestic violence, I think, is around the same kind of thing. If you're, you know, if you witnessed it in the home and now you're an adult and you have this and you now do it yourself, I mean, this is a major problem. Intimate partner homicide is something that the police really have not much control over. So, you know, fortunately for this one, maybe it wasn't going to happen. Maybe the alcohol was talking or whatever it was. But, hey, listen, we can't take anything for granted anymore. Anytime somebody makes a statement, whether it's going to be now on social media or overheard in a bar, these things are going to be investigated fully because nobody wants to be on the hook for it if it happens and they say, well, you know, we didn't know about it.
Well, that seems to be the case, no question. I got one more for you, Joe. A Mount Sinai security guard. What was the deal with that guy? You know, he had the shirt on and everything else. That certainly put up some flags, some writing on it. You know, he beat up some 68-year-old. What do we know about this guy?
Yeah, no, I haven't really heard too much more about this. I just saw the headline about it, but I haven't followed that one, Jay. And I haven't heard much about it elsewhere.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Lots happening. Hit some of the key ones there. We'll keep an eye on things. But a very, very interesting week as far as what has happened in the courts and in and around. Joseph, always a pleasure, sir. And we'll talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend.